This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Todd. Our next guest, Julianne Schultz, author. A new book, The Idea of Australia, A Search for the Soul of the Nation. Good morning, Julianne. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Look, it's a pleasure, and I'm actually going to buy this book because, well, you know, my partner will be going, oh, God, not another bloody book. But when I read about, you know, what you've written about, and if I can... One of the things to help us understand what the book was about, maybe Australia being home to the world's oldest continuous culture, it's just too difficult for its white settlers to comprehend that Australia needs to address the issues of our past if it's to become more than a half-formed idea.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you... So when you wanted to write this book, Julianne, what position did you start from, and did you end up in the same position at the end?
Well, I should say that I went through a wave. I mean, in the book I talk about the ways of Australian history and culture, doing things and then pulling back. And I think I went through that same sort of wave in a way. I mean, I started because I heard around me lots of people saying, I don't understand what this country's about anymore. I don't understand what our values are. I don't understand why we've become so mean when we've become richer. I don't, you know, there's a sort of a general sort of disquiet that I think a lot of people share. And so when the pandemic hit and I was forced to, you know, stay at home for a couple of years, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to try and make sense of that. And in doing that, I really found I had to keep going back to the unresolved issues of the past that kept on bubbling up. And you were talking about that, you know, before with the shooting of in the Northern Territory and the way that the final court judgment on that, which is one of those things that just keep coming back, you know. And so I was really trying, not as a psychoanalyst, but, you know, with a bit of those sort of tools to try and figure out what had happened in the past that we hadn't resolved and why that kept rebounding in the present. So that was sort of the starting point. So, you know, I had some pretty down days when I was doing that research, I have to say. There's a lot of stuff which, you know, is not nice to have to look at.
No.
But by the end, I was quite hopeful. And we can talk about that later.
Well, that's good. It's Todd here. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Todd.
I'm really interested in this idea of speaking back to history, particularly in Australia. Mm. And I get the sense that many Australians are scared to think about our history. Is that something that why do you think that is?
Absolutely. Look, I think that there is somewhere deep in the national psyche, a sense of shame of things that have not gone right. I mean, there's pride in all the good things, but we've never quite managed to resolve the shame of the process, not just of colonial settlement, which was its own violent enterprise for both First Nations people and, you know, also for the convicts and others who were brought here under, you know, pretty brutal circumstances. But that wasn't resolved at Federation when the nation was formed, and it still hasn't been resolved.
So how should it be resolved, Julianne? You know, that you've got two groups, First Nations people and, you know, a much smaller group of convicts. And, you know, this wasn't resolved at Federation. It was like, oh, well, you know, look, we're now going to form a country. Mm. But we haven't resolved the issues of our past, have we? How do we resolve them? How do we deal with them?
Well, I think that one of the first starting points would be to be adopting the Uluru Statement from the Heart. I think that that process of formal constitutional recognition coupled with a voice to Parliament, so it's a structure that's got real muscle, is one step. I think the other two steps of that in terms of the truth-telling and treaty are also really important. In and of themselves, I mean, Jeremy Bentham, the great British polymath, in 1803, said that the failure to come to a treaty with the First Nations people who were who were here when the British arrived was potentially an incurable flaw. Now, he said it was incurable in 1803, and it's proved to be the case until 2022. I'm just hoping that, 2023, or pretty soon thereafter, the flaw is cured.
And I couldn't agree more. What's really fascinating about history in Australia is that it generally starts at 1788, which I find an interesting starting point for Australia, considering that we do have the world's oldest living continuous culture. But thinking about the future, if you're bringing this idea of the idea of Australia, where are we going, Julianne? Where do you think the nation should go, particularly when we search for the soul of the nation?
Yeah. Look, I think that there's a real disparity between the sort of the mainstream political leadership that we've got and what people are talking and wanting to see happen. And I mean, that's always been the way. You know, one of the arguments I make in the book is that the culture leads the politics. And if anyone's paying close attention to the culture and to the things that people are writing and talking and singing and performing and, painting and all the rest of it, if anyone pays attention to that, you get a sense of a country which is ready to take a really big step, not just to reconciling and making good that fundamental flaw at the beginning of settlement, but also to find ways of dealing with the trauma and shame and achievements that we have across a whole range of, the multi-layered nature of this society. And that's what I find hopeful. I think that people are looking for that. I don't think they're getting it from their political leadership. But I really do think that when you look, for instance, at the independence campaigns, which are in so many local electorates, leading up to the federal election, it's one of the sort of odd paradoxes of the COVID situation, where we're all stuck in 5 kilometre ranges, that people started to get to know their neighbourhood much better than they had previously, and to find out what the problems and strengths were. That's given the independence movement a real momentum. And so I'm thinking that idea of the local is where we're going to get this real bubbling up. I mean, we're seeing it in northern New South Wales at the moment. The response to that devastation of those floods has come absolutely from people organising themselves. Now, that's not sufficient, but that in itself is a really powerful driver of change.
When I look, Julianne, at the history of the LGBTQI community, and let's use 1970 as a starting point for a desire for greater recognition and equality, and in 50 years on, an enormous amount has been achieved. Probably one of the greatest changes culturally that's been brought about in society in a couple of millennia. So why, with Indigenous people, with First Nations people, why have we made such little progress? And I don't think it's not because there aren't sufficient people that really want to advance and to deliver equality and recognition. Why has it not happened?
Well, I think there's been I think you're right. I think people want it to happen. Here in Sydney, we're celebrating the 90th anniversary of the Harbour Bridge today. And the big highlight of that was that huge reconciliation walk in 2000, where hundreds of thousands of people turned out. I have no doubt that people are looking for that resolution. The political leadership has been scared of it. I mean, the political response to the Uluru Statement was one of the lowest points in Australian history, in my view. And, I mean, I think that one of the differences with the LGBTIQ process of inclusion and, legal recognition and, all the changes that have happened over that period, like the changes that have happened in relation to the position of women, is that touches everybody's life. the fact is that in Australia, there are very, very large numbers of people who have never met an Aboriginal person or Torres Strait Islander.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that personal connection. But what they're starting to hear now is the stories from this brilliant young generation, new generation of people who are following the lead of the elders who've always been there, to tell the stories and to find ways of connecting. So I think that connecting personally is now starting to make a difference. But underneath it all, you know, when the foundation stone of Canberra was laid, Billy Hughes, who was not then the Prime Minister, but was a Prime Minister not long afterwards, said, we've got to remember we got this territory by wiping out another race. We need to be careful that we don't get wiped out ourselves. So there is at the core of the nation both a shame about that and a knowledge that it sits there and it needs to be addressed.
Well,
I mean, it needs to be talked about by people like you and like me, as well as the leadership and members of First Nations communities.
That's right. And I think talking about this, particularly the shame that emerges from these types of conversations, as well as the guilt that people generally have, I think this inheritance of shame is very fascinating. And something that comes to my mind is who bears responsibility to unpack that and to undo that? So often reconciliation is the work of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people saying, hey, walk with me after you've done some horrible things for the last couple of hundred years. That responsibility of reconciliation consistently lands on the shoulders of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, which I find a little bit weird. But, you know, that's just me. But I think the responsibility part of it, particularly in all of Australia, needs to think about these things from a local, state level and a federal level about what is it that we've done? How do we tell truth properly? But how do we hold people in that truth to allow them to unpack it for themselves, their families and their communities?
Yeah. And look, it needs to be, you know, we non-First Nations people need to follow that lead, but we need to be willing to put our shoulder to the grindstone as well. And, I mean, it's been interesting when I've been talking about the book. I'm finding that there is still a sort of sense of, oh, gosh, I know it was bad, but I don't know what to do. I think that process of sitting respectfully, listening, hearing the stories, not asking people to constantly retell the trauma the trauma of their lives. I mean, that is in itself, you know, a sort of, oh, well, I've heard your story. That's terrible. Now tell it to me again. I mean, that's really...
Or get over it.
Or get over it. You told it now. Go away. And so it's a matter... I mean, I think it needs strong people on the ground. I think it needs infusion in the schools. But I think it needs political leaders who've got some courage and are willing to sit with what will be uncomfortable. But it will also be... There'll also be stories of affirmation and achievement and joy, you know, and... I mean, one of the things that I think is really important is while we tend to go back to the moments of colonisation or, you know, of Captain Cook and then the moments of colonisation with the penal colony, and they were obviously hugely formative, the real decisions about creating the nation happen with Federation. And we know next to nothing about that. We know next to nothing about the debates about what could have been a very different polity. I mean, there were people arguing for a very different sort of localism, for people arguing for bills of rights, people arguing for universal suffrage to be included in the Constitution, not something that was given to women 2 years later in a political deal, but something that was actually embedded in the Constitution. So if we're not aware of the contest that went on, it's a bit hard to say, you know, to come to terms with it. You know, like, I think what we will be, the conversations that I anticipate we'll be having in 20 years' time about the brutal treatment of refugees over this last decade or so. I mean, it's not as though we haven't known what was going on. It's just that we haven't, those of us who are opposed to it, haven't prevailed. That's the pattern, that we know what's going on, it gets pushed aside, and we come back and we have to rediscover it again.
Julianne, thank you.
Can I tell you a hopeful thing?
Yes.
No. Please. So it's from Ellen and Unwin, The Idea of Australia by Julianne Schultz. I'm going to buy a copy. And you know what? People, go and buy a copy at a bookshop, right? Because the bookshops need our support. I know it's cheaper in other places, but you know what? Support the local bookshop. Thank you for writing this, Julianne, and I hope...
Thank you, and I hope you enjoy it.
I do. I'm sure I will, and, you know, thanks for telling us about your journey, and let's hope that it continues to strike a chord.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.